Attention all Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio listeners. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast brings you the best in East Coast esoterica on the first of every month. Together, we can keep it growing by sharing the show on social media, subscribing to the show wherever you may be listening to it from, and by leaving feedback about your favorite episodes. John certainly needs a friend like you to help make his dreams come true, minus the alien abduction dreams. That is not cool at all. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. Always available. Always free. Always odd.
The following podcast is brought to you by Newfie EVP, Talking with the Dead in Newfoundland. Jump on Amazon.ca today and get your free sample of the best-selling ebook in Unexplained Mysteries.
It's the odd to Newfoundland. Ghostly greetings from your host, Jonathan. Mysteries, ghosts, monsters, and lore. East Coast esoterica and so much more. If it's up to you, friend, it's on the up to Newfoundland.
Ghostly greetings from the oldest city in North America. I'm your host, John Mallard, bringing you the best in East Coast esoterica. You, my friends, have stumbled upon the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast for the month of October 2017. Episode 45 is here. Happy Halloween, guys. Enjoy your Halloween episode. Remember, you're wonderful. You're a masterpiece. You're beautifully made. You're important to people because you're important to me. You're highly favored by your creator, whether that is a god or the law of averages working in tandem with a little bit of physics. You're thirsty for knowledge and addicted to wonder. You, my friend, a total oddball. And here on this show, you're my family. And we are one. This is episode 45 of the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast, your monthly paranormal variety show. Happy Halloween. I hope the season does you well. It's been doing me pretty good. I've been one heck of a busy, busy boy. My foster child is finally here. I'm now the proud father, well, father and foster father of three children now, because, you know, I never had enough to do to begin with. And, you know, for anybody who's actually been a part of this podcast for the last few months, you've been hearing me talk about this. This has been going on now for almost a whole year, and it finally came to a head. I am now the proud foster father, we'll say, of a child who is medically fragile, has taken up a lot of my time. So now is the best time ever for you to help me out. I literally have no time to promote this show anymore. It's true. It's damn true. I could certainly use your help. So get on there, subscribe, let people know about the show, share it, tell your friends. I mean, it's Halloween. It's the one time of year where I'm not the biggest dork you know. Yeah, that's right. People love me at Halloween, and I love you. Thanks so much for downloading this podcast. Once again, episode 45 is going to be super awesome. Tis the season. I know that a lot of people are very excited this time of year to get down and dirty with it, so I'll waste no time at all. My friends, it's time to dig in to the paranormal news. So I might as well be straight with you guys. I tried to keep this a little bit Halloween themed. Well, kinda. I mean, paranormal news is always, well, paranormal, and that's Halloween. But, you know, I kind of try to keep it a little bit weirder stories, kind of on the Halloween theme-ish. So I found these stories around the net the last month. I think you guys will really, really enjoy them. The first one is, scientists invent a whole new type of chocolate. I mean, this year you might just be getting the brand new Ruby chocolate. The intriguing pink-hued delicacy is the first new type of chocolate in 80 years. Now officially the fourth main type of chocolate after milk, dark and white, the new variety uses the Ruby cocoa bean to produce a uniquely smooth and fruity flavor. The last new type of chocolate, white, was developed all the way back in the 1930s. Ruby chocolate is very different and very clever, said industry expert Angus Kennedy. It's refreshing and has a light creamy texture. It tastes so light and fruity, you don't realize you're gobbling it up one chocolate after the other. So it means consumers will be able to eat more of it than other types of conventional chocolate. Sounds like a win-win to me. Whether this is a good or bad thing depends on your point of view. As anybody out there is trying to lose weight, Halloween's a nightmare. Stay the hell away from Ruby chocolate. I think it's really cool that we got a brand new flavor. Oh, man, and I'm so glad they didn't count, that old mint chocolate as a flavor. Wow. Got to rank up there as, like, my least favorite kind of chocolate. What would you do in a zombie apocalypse? What would you do? Well, a new poll in the UK has revealed that some people may already be preparing for such an eventuality. The destruction of mankind at the hands of a contagious zombie virus is a scenario that has played out time and time again in movies, books, and TV shows. Of course, my favorite TV show being The Walking Dead. But what if it were to actually happen for real? In a new YouGov poll, members of the public were asked if they had a plan for dealing with such a situation, and if so, what would it be? For many people, the biggest priorities would be to gather food, water, and medicine, and to get out of the cities in favor of finding shelter somewhere out in the countryside. Acquiring weapons, rescuing family members, and actively killing zombies were also on the list. Around 9% of those with a plan even refused to divulge what it actually was. Clearly, we shouldn't be worrying 24/7 about a potential apocalypse, but it's interesting to take a snapshot of where we are now and where we'd fare, said Professor Lewis Dartnell. I know one thing. The one thing I'm not doing during a zombie apocalypse is staying in one place. I'm going to find a place that's either super sheltered and then fight my way out, or, go find me Rick Grimes. Let's be honest, he's the man. I'm actually kind of curious. How many of you guys out there are fans of The Walking Dead? I mean, zombies are as old as time, I think of the old movies and stuff like that. They've actually been a part of our culture for such a long time. I wonder how many people out there who listen to the Odd, the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast love, The Walking Dead. I love it. Why don't you let me know in the show notes or wherever you listen to the show, just drop me a little message. And by the way, if you do want to get a hold of me and, leave a comment or ask a question or anything like that, okay? lifeafterdeathsociety@gmail.com is the email address, okay? Just thought I'd put that out there because I haven't had any message in the mailbag. Of course, people are being, a little bit preoccupied, being that Doomsday has been now postponed until October. Maybe they'll have some free time. The man behind this month's Doomsday prophecy has pushed the apocalypse back another few weeks. Unsurprisingly, the world did not end on September 23rd. A date had been widely publicized both in tabloids and on social media as the day non-existent planet Nibiru was to collide with Earth. Now David Mead, the Christian numerologist who first came up with the prediction based on a rare celestial alignment and its connections to the Bible, has pushed back the date of this alleged doomsday to sometime in October when the world as we know it will come to an end. It is possible at the end of October we may be about to enter into the seventh year tribulation period to be followed by a millennium of peace, he wrote. When Nibiru is on close approach to Earth, sometimes during the tribulation, you'll have solar flares and a possible loss of the electrical grid for weeks, maybe even longer. As always, however, given that there is no evidence whatsoever that Nibiru actually exists, the chances of any sort of apocalyptic scenario occurring next month in relation to it are practically zero. NASA in particular has been keen to dismiss the entire thing as nonsense. Various people are predicting that the world will end in the near future when another planet collides with Earth, the space agency wrote. The planet in question, Nibiru, doesn't exist, so there will not be no collision. The story of Nibiru has been around for years, as has the Days of Darkness tale, and is periodically recycled into new apocalyptic tablets and fables. Nibiru and other stories about wayward planets are an internet hoax. There is no factual basis for these claims. If Nibiru or Planet X were real and headed for the encounter with the Earth, astronomers would have been tracking it for at least the past decade, and it would be visible by now to the naked eye. Obviously, it does not exist. In other words, stop worrying, there is no Nibiru, and the world is not coming to an end. But it's definitely a fitting story for the Halloween episode of the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast, because, one of my favorite songs is I See a Bad Moon Rising. So maybe we can change the words a little bit here, I see Planet X on the way. Don't go around tonight, Nibiru will take your life. Oh, I better stop singing or I'm going to lose subscribers again. Last time I did that, I lost 20. Actually, that's a lie. I'm actually up. There's new subscribers every day to the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. If you guys haven't had a chance to subscribe, it's pretty simple. Just go to Podbean, look for Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast, subscribe. And every time you get an episode, you get an email and you'll be known when the next episode will be there. Because, it's easy to forget me because it's only once a month. I promise you I won't sing if you subscribe. Of course, I just let down the last 200 people. I promised that too. Did you know a bizarre life form caught on camera in Taiwan has been making the rounds? I don't know if you've seen this or not, but a strange creature made up of a tangled black vine has been filmed thrashing around on the ground. The organism, which kind of looks like black licorice, which was recorded by Huang Milin of Hinshu, Taiwan, appears to consist of a mass of black vine-like appendages that are able to move independently of one another. In the video, these can be seen undulating and wriggling around in a highly disconcerting manner. I found this on the ground and it caught my eye, said Huang. It was so strange and people said differing things about it, but I wanted to know what it actually was. One possible explanation is that the creature is actually a tangled-up mass of horsehair worms. Some internet users have even taken to describing it as an dum-dum-dum alien life form. Very, very odd, odd, odd. And speaking of straggly, long-limbed creatures from the sea, oh, man. Okay, I know this hasn't got anything to do with Halloween, but, you know, maybe you want to go as an octopus. And this will definitely be right up your alley because Octopus City is real. It's been found off the coast of Australia. Members of the gloomy octopus species have created their own underwater settlement dubbed Octlantis. Situated in Jarvis Bay on the coastline of eastern Australia, the remarkable Octopus City consists of special dens constructed from sand and shells that can house up to 15 of the cephalopods. The find is particularly unusual, not only due to the level of cooperation taking place, but because the gloomy octopus was typically considered to be an isolated and solitary species. To observe their behavior, an international team of researchers set up an underwater camera which recorded the animals meeting up, communicating, and even chasing away rivals. These behaviors of natural selection and may be remarkably similar to vertebrate complex social behaviors, said lead researcher David Scheel from Alaska Pacific University. This suggests that when the right conditions occur, evolution may produce very similar outcomes in diverse organisms. Yeah, I think it's pretty cool they got their own city. Let's take a little listen to the story here.
New research suggests octopuses may like hanging out with their friends just like we do. Researchers observed a group of about 15 gloomy octopuses off the eastern coast of Australia. Their findings, recently published in the journal Marine and Freshwater Behavior and Physiology, seem to contradict the animal's reputation as a loner. The congregation site, which is also home to numerous octopus dens, has been dubbed Octlantis by researchers. GoPro cameras filmed the animals for 10 hours. Footage revealed groups of them socializing, but not all the interactions were positive. Researchers said they even observed some octopuses kicking others out of their dens. Octlantis sits only a few hundred meters away from an octopus settlement nicknamed Octopolis, which was discovered in 2009. Authors of the latest study say they need to conduct more research to better understand octopus behavior and the perks of living in a group. For United News International, I'm Kia Brie Caldwell.
Pretty cool. You know, I'm a sucker for animals anyway. Guys, what can I say? We've had some really weird stuff. We had a brand new type of chocolate. Yeah, ruby chocolate. So when you say trick or treat, ask for the newest treat on the street. We had an actual poll in the UK. What would you do in a zombie apocalypse? We had the doomsday. Finally, you know, for the 25th time, it seems like this year, doomsday has been postponed until October. What else is new? We had a bizarre life form caught on camera in Taiwan. You can check that on YouTube, by the way. We also had, well, Octopus City, which is found off the coast of Australia. Every one of these stories, guys, have been odd to Newfoundland. All right, guys, it's almost time for oddities, but first we're going to check in with our old friend Laura. Laura, what's going on in the skies this Halloween?
Thanks, John. I would like to welcome you to your MUFON Minute for October 2017. I was working in my lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight, for Johnny from recording booth did rise, and suddenly, to my surprise, he did the podcast mash. It was a graveyard smash. He did the mesh. It caught on in a flash. He did the mesh. He did the podcast mash. Now, for your auditory enjoyment, this month, dear listeners, I have decided to offer up some oratory delights. The written word, delicately woven into rhyme or prose, relax, breathe, take in these poems for your Halloween treats. Aliens, UFO by Jacob Quadro. Secret, secrets in the bright sky, wondering if you're ever true or just a lie. Little lights in the night, can they be stars or spaceships? How long are you green fellas gonna stay for this trip? UFO passing as they whirled, probably waiting patiently to take over this world. Absorbing the information about the human races and our planet Earth, traveling around the galaxies for generations to see if this was worth the worth. When are you going to invade? Because the human race is destroying each other's and we're starting to fade. If you don't like our planet, and if you are really true, all I can say is, please take me with you. The Alien by Craig Delanty. I'm back again, scrutinizing the Milky Way of your ultrasound, scanning the dark matter, the nothingness, that now the heads say is chock-a-block with quarks and squarks, gravitons and gravitini, photons and photinos. Our sprout, who art there inside the spacecraft of your mom, the time capsule of this printout, hurling and whirling towards us, it's all daft on this earth. Our alien, who art in the heavens, our Martian, our little green man, we're anxious to make contact, to ask divers questions about heavendom you fail from, to discuss the whole shebang of the beginning and the end, the pre-Big Bang on time, before you forget why and lie of thy first place, and our friend, to say welcome, that we mean no harm, we die for you even, that we pray you're not here to subdue us, that we put away our ray guns, missiles, attitude, and share our world with you. Little big head, if only you stay. As you take your little princess and pirate out trick-or-treating, stay safe and keep an eye on the skies. If you ever have any UFO experiences, be sure to report it to www.mufon.com. For more information about MUFON in Newfoundland and Labrador, please be sure to check out the Newfoundland UFO Network on Facebook. Thanks, John.
Thank God. It's time for oddities.
Alive! It's alive! It's alive!
Boy, that escalated quickly.
I want to believe.
Welcome to the desert of the real.
All right, welcome to Oddities. 10 strange but very true facts about an odd, odd world. And, well, I've decided to change things up a little bit once again with the oddities. That's right, tonight I'm going to bring you 13 because it's Halloween. 13. 13 strange facts about Halloween. Number one, did you know there's a $1,000 fine for using or selling silly string in Hollywood on Halloween? The prank product has been banned in Hollywood since 2004 after thousands of bored people would buy it on the streets of Hollywood from illegal vendors and vandalize the streets. The city ordinance calls for a maximum $1,000 fine and or 6 months in jail for use, possession, sale, or distribution of silly string in Hollywood from 12:01 a.m. on October 31st to 12 o'clock p.m. on November 1st. Holy mackerel. Are you kidding me? People are going to get arrested for silly string? Can you imagine the conversation in a jail cell? What are you in for? Extortion. What are you in for? I beat the crap out of some guy in a bar. What are you in for? I sprayed silly string at my friend. The other two convicts look over at them, at the silly string and say, man, what a badass. Number two, dressing up on Halloween comes from the Celts. Celts believe Samhain was a time when the wall between our world and the paranormal world was porous. Spirits could get through. Because of this belief, it was common for the Celts to wear costumes and masks during the festival and ward off or befuddle any evil spirits. Moniker Halloween comes from Catholics, though. This is number three. Hallowmas is a three-day Catholic holiday where saints are honored and people pray for the recently deceased. At the start of the 11th century, it was decreed by the Pope that it would last from October 31st, which is All Hallows Eve, until November 2nd, most likely because that was when Samhain was celebrated and the church was trying to convert the pagans. All Hallows Eve then evolved into All Hallows Even, And by the 18th century, it was commonly referred to as Halloween. Number four, carved turnips. We should carve turnips, not pumpkins. The original jack-o'-lanterns came from a Celtic folktale of a stingy farmer named Jack, who would constantly play tricks on the devil. The devil responded by forcing him to wander in purgatory with only a burning lamp of coal from hell. Jack took the coal and made a lantern from a turnip, using it to guide his lost soul. The myth was brought over by Irish families fleeing the potato famine in the 1800s, and since turnips were hard to come by in the U.S., American pumpkins were used as a substitute to guide lost souls and keep evil spirits like Jack of the Lantern away. Number 5. Halloween symbols aren't random. Black cats, spiders, and bats are all Halloween symbols because they're spooky histories and ties to Wiccans. All three were thought to be familiars of witches in the Middle Ages and are often associated with bad luck. Bats are even further connected to Halloween by the ancient Samhain ritual of building a bonfire which drove away insects and attracted bats. Number 6. Fears of poison Halloween candy are just not true. One of the parents' biggest fears is that their children's Halloween candy is poisoned or contains razor blades. In reality, this fear is almost entirely unfounded. There are only 2 known cases of poisoning, and both involve relatives, according to LiveScience.com. In 1970, a boy died of a heroin overdose. The investigators found it on his candy, but in a twist, they later discovered the boy had accidentally consumed of his uncle's heroin stash, and the family had sprinkled some on the candy to cover up the incident. Even more horrifically, in 1974, Timothy O'Brien died after eating a pixie stick his father had laced with cyanide to collect on the insurance money, according to the Smithsonian Magazine. Number 7. Halloween and candy industry supposedly influenced daylight savings time. Candy makers supposedly lobbied to extend daylight savings time into the beginning of November to get an extra hour of daylight so children could collect even more candy, thus forcing people to purchase more candy to meet the demand. They wanted it so badly that during 1985 hearings on daylight savings, they put candy pumpkins on the seat of every senator, according to NPR. The candy industry disputes this account, according to the New York Times, though. Candy corn was originally known as chicken feed. It had no association with Halloween or fall and was seasonally from March to November after World War II. Advertisers began marketing it as a special Halloween treat due to its colors and ties to the fall harvest. Pretty neat. Did you know a full moon on Halloween is extremely, extremely rare? Though a common trope in horror movies and Halloween decorations with witches flying across the full moon, the next full moon on Halloween won't occur until 2020. The most recent Halloween full moon was back in 2001, and before that it was 1955. So there you go. Halloween, number 10. Halloween is still Wiccan New Year. Halloween originates from the Celtic tradition Samhain, a festival that marked the end of the Celtic calendar year in Ireland, Scotland, and the Isle of Man. They believed it was a time that spirits or fairies could enter our world, and the Celts would put out treats and food to placate or satisfy the spirits. Sometimes a place at the table was even set for the souls of the dead. Wiccans still celebrate Samhain as a New Year celebration to this very, very day. And I actually have a few friends out there who are Wiccans. Guys, Happy New Year to you. Bless your hearts. I love you all. Number 11. Trick-or-treating has been around for a long time. Well, of course it has been. Versions of trick-or-treating have existed since medieval times. In the past, it was known as guising, where children and poor adults went around in costumes during Hallowmas, begging for food and money in exchange for songs or prayers. It was called souling. The Great Pumpkin Charlie Brown. Trick-or-treating as we know it was actually repopularized by cartoons. Trick-or-treating was brought to America by the Irish and became popular during the early 20th century, but died out during World War II when sugar was rationed. After the rationing ended in 1947, children's magazine Jack and Jill radio program The Adventures of Ozzie and Harriet and the Peanuts comic strip all helped to repopularize the tradition of dressing up in costumes and asking for candy door-to-door. By 1952, trick-or-treating was hugely popular once again. And 13, here's something that's kind of becoming more and more evident. The candy industry in America rakes in an average of $2 billion annually thanks to Halloween. That's 90 million pounds of chocolate if you're counting, folks. Americans spend an estimated $6 billion on Halloween candy alone, including candy, costumes, and decorations, according to History.com. The most commercial holiday in the U.S., of course, is obviously Christmas, but man, Halloween is just behind there. So there you have it, guys. There's your Halloween oddities. We got our guest coming up. He's coming up really, really soon. Don't you dare go away.
Attention all Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn radio listeners. The Odd to New Finland Paranormal Podcast brings you the best in East Coast esoterica on the first of every month. Together, we can keep it growing by sharing the show on social media, subscribing to the show wherever you may be listening to it from, and by leaving feedback about your favorite episodes. John certainly needs a friend like you to help make his dreams come true, minus the alien abduction dreams. That is not cool at all. The Odd to New Finland Paranormal Podcast, always available, always free, always odd.
Welcome back, guys, to the Odd to New Finland Paranormal Podcast. You know, 43 was the episode, The Exorcism of Cindy Sauer, one of the most controversial episodes I ever recorded. It garnered a lot of attention from a lot of people. Some people were very, very disturbed by the episode. Some people were very, very enlightened by the episode. Some people had a lot of hope. So I kind of dug around a little bit, and I messaged Cindy. I said, is there anybody else involved with your story? And she said, of course there is. There's Jason. And tonight, we have Jason Britt on the show, the man who actually was by Cindy's side during this whole ordeal. He's got quite the background and quite the story. It's a different perspective. This is the continuation, really, of The Exorcism of Cindy Sauer, told by Jason's own perspective here. So, Jason, how are you tonight?
Really good. Thanks for having me on the show, Jonathan. It's a pleasure.
Always, always love a guest that's connected to a past guest. And lo and behold, I have a man who's also connected to the church. So that's another bonus. I love having people like you on, my friend. Jason, before I even drive into this and we get into, you know, your take on what was going on with Cindy and stuff like that, I'm going to ask you, what exactly is your background? Tell me a little tiny bit about how, you know, you're involved with church and stuff like that.
Sure. I grew up Pentecostal. We were kind of old school Pentecostal, not snake handling Pentecostal. When you say that word, people think of different things. I was old school Assemblies of God, and I grew up there. I love my heritage, love my faith. I think that it taught me a lot. Went to college, to seminary, and kind of got ruined as to doctrine. You know how that tends to do. And you come out full of promise, you launch into ministry, and then you just realize, wow, this is completely different than what I thought it would be. I had some great church experiences, some very horrible church experiences, some I just try not to think about. Growing up Pentecostal, it was that the thought was we were a demon caster outer church. And there was a demon behind every corner, this and that. Now, we didn't believe that, but some people in our church did. And so you had spirits. You had like, oh, they have a spirit of jealousy, when really that person is just a turd. Or, you know, they have really have a spirit of hatred, or they've got a spirit of this. Everything was a spirit, and we use that term to really describe personality traits. And you recognize that when you're younger, but the language becomes so normal to you that when you're older, it's kind of weird to meet people that don't speak in those terms. You're like, wait a minute, you can really just say somebody's being a jerk, and it has nothing to do with them having a spirit? This is really awesome. So coming from that background, it's funny. There was one particular instance in church where my pastor at the time, I was 16, and he told us, hey, you know, stand to the side. And there was a lady down there, and she was obviously possessed by something. She began to slide around a little bit like a snake on the floor and recoil, and he cast out the spirit of fear. It named itself, and it was cast out. Then there was another instance where little old ladies, never doubt the power of little old ladies praying at church. They'll show up to pray at a prayer meeting when nobody else will. And these little old ladies were praying, well, one forward, and come to find out they said seven devils in her, and one came kind of, you know, shooting out the back door. This was secondhand, told to me from my friend who was 16 and at a prayer meeting with a bunch of 80-year-old spirit-filled ladies. It was really funny. But come to find out, she'd been poisoning people in the local nursing homes around town. So there was something to that. So those were my only two really demonic experiences, I would say. So coming and when Cindy, when that happened, that thing with her, I recognized that instantly as that's what this has to be. So I was prepared for it in that sense, but the show made it sound like I ran around casting out demons all the time, and I didn't. I mean, everybody has a story to tell. I'm glad it made for great TV, but that's just absolutely untruthful. There were two instances before where I had experiences with the demonic. And then, of course, growing up, you see things. We can get into that later if you want to. But when that happened with Cindy, I knew that was a possession. And the only option at that point is God. It's either God or nothing. And you don't want nothing. So you certainly, you know, you appeal to him and hope that he shows up.
Of course. And, you know, having that background, I believe you said, you know, we were talking beforehand, I believe you said 16 years a pastor. having that experience behind you, I mean, suddenly it becomes a lot more real. You know, we all see God working in our lives, there's no doubt. But we also see a lot of bad stuff that we can't explain. You know, it only makes sense that there has to be an alpha and omega. There has to be some kind of negative force. And it does make great sense the way you've explained it there that, you know, we can cast these things out. Jason, how successful were you with Cindy, though?
That's a loaded word because I don't think, let me answer it two ways. Number one, I don't think I'm successful with anything in and of myself. It's about God showing up. And number two, if you're asking me, is she rid of it? The answer is somewhat. I mean, it still kind of tries to come around and do whatever, you know, it wants to do. But the night that we first encountered it was after that house in the episode where it talks about, you know, we were ghost hunting. And we were in a CVS parking lot, and she was really nervous and anxious, and she just wasn't acting like the Cindy I knew. So I grabbed her and had my arms around her, and she's like, "Let me go." I said, "No." I said, "You need to let her go." And I started praying, and I said, "What's your name? Tell me your name." It never said its name. That's when she leaned back, and her eyes got really big, and it's almost like her smile widened too wide, if that makes sense. She did not look like herself, and this hiss came out like a snake hiss, and then she collapsed. She goes, "What's wrong?" She said, "Please help me." And I started praying again, and she collapsed. And we just sat in the parking lot for probably 20 or 30 minutes. I said, there's something here. We need to, you know, we need to get somebody to help, because I knew enough to know that me casting it out isn't anything to cast out. And you can't do it in and of yourself. And that, I think that's the first fallacy with the demonic, is we're taught with our doctrine, you can take authority over these things in the name of Jesus. You can't. I know what the Bible says. I understand. I mean, I've got the seminary degree. I speak more Hebrew and Greek than most people walking around, or read it. I don't speak it, but you know, you can read it and parse it, and you understand what it means. You can like to think that you take authority over these things, but after dealing with them the way that we have, and seeing the relentless nature, and seeing how there's a familiarity there, there's something that has to happen where there's a tie that's broken, and we're still exploring whether or not that's a generational thing or a causal thing. I don't think it's causal. I definitely think it's generational. So when you end up dealing with an entity the first time, or a demonic, a demon, it kind of knows you. It marks you, I think, in some way. And then it comes around, and she had exorcism number two, and it was gone for a while. And then over here, we've had a few attacks, but nothing full-fledged. So I liken it to that scripture where it says, if you cast out a demon, it will go, you know, it'll hit the earth, it'll take off. Then it will come back after a time, and seeing that the house is clean and in order, it will come back sevenfold. In other words, it does no good to clean your house if you don't fill it with something. So you constantly have to fill your house with, you know, things, the things of God. Hey, meditate on his word, pray, let's have Christian conversation and discourse, etc. Meditate on the spiritual things, the good things, the blessings, the authoritative things that he lays out in scripture. So when something comes to your front door, you can politely but firmly and authoritatively say, no, thank you, we gave it the office, if that makes sense, and it won't come in. So I think we deal with that from time to time. But as for me being successful casting out an entity, I don't think it was successful at all, because I don't think that at that point success even enters into the equation. It's just, hey, this person needs peace, and I'm appealing to God because I know I can't do anything. It would be like asking me to take a dump truck and tow it up a hill. And hey, how successful were you with that? Well, it's not. It's not me. It's the, you know, the hydraulic winch you gave me that I hooked myself to that pulled us up the hill. You know, it's that's kind of how those types of questions, because I know in our human cognizance we think we can do things, and experience has shown me otherwise. It's definitely reshaped my theology a little bit concerning the matter.
Absolutely. You know, people right away have it in their head what an exorcism is, right away, because thanks to Hollywood, we have Linda Blair in her head spinning around and, you know, green tapioca pudding it and throwing at the walls. And, you know, this is sure. What people have in their heads, this vision. But what is it really like to see that rite of exorcism performed? What is it really like? Is it very much so like the movies, or is it really, you know, something completely different?
It's a little bit yes, a little bit no, and a little bit wow to answer that. When Father Darren came in, when we I went outside to speak with him, and I left Cindy on the couch with the dog. She had a dog at the time, and I said, hey, here, hold the dog. It's safe. It, you know, the dog kind of watched over her. Was really animals, we were taught growing up, oh, animals are animals. No, they can sense things more so than we can. They have a broader spectrum of sight and sound. I'm convinced of that now. Well, the dog was watching over her, and I said, just stay there. So I went and to talk to him, and while we were talking, he said, has she been baptized? I said, yes, she has, a couple times. He said, well, if she's been baptized, then the spirit can't enter her. And I said, you need to just come in and see. I said, you grew up, you know, he's Anglican. We were both Protestant, but and at the time, I thought he was Catholic just because of the rite of exorcism, but he actually performed the Anglican rite. And I didn't know that there was anything other than the Catholic rite, so shame on me. But he said, I said, you need to come in and see, because she's been baptized, but there's something going on. I said, and I grew up Pentecostal, where we were taught you just take authority over these things and they leave. That's not what's going on here. There's something else. And so he said, okay, I'll be in a minute. I came inside and Cindy was gone. And I told her, I said, babe, where are you? Cindy, where are you? And I found her in the kitchen rifling through the drawers. And she was rifling. And I said, what are you looking for? She said, I want it. I'm going to see it. I said, you're not getting any knives. And I don't know why. That morning when I woke up and we knew they were coming out, she'd gone to take a bath or something. Well, I just took the knives and hit him in a different part. I don't know why I did that. There was no reason for me to do that. I never lived in fear. When the, you know, there was a possession or there was a demonic entity around, I never thought, oh my gosh, he's going to stab me in the neck or anything like that. People ask those questions all the time. It wasn't like that. But this day I thought, okay, do that. And I look back and that was a complete God thing. That was God saying, hey, I've got your back here. Just be obedient, do this. And I just stuck. And at the time I remember thinking, this is really weird. So I hid them and that she was looking for a knife. Later she told me she wanted to just cut her leg open and see it bleed. The thing just wanted to see it bleed, like it was trying on a new skin and wanted to, you know, see what this was all about. So I took her from there and sat her down. And when I sat her on the couch, about 2 or 3 minutes later, Father Darren comes in, and she did this weird spider crawl thing across the couch, and I was holding her wrist, and she was screaming, stop it, you're hurting me, let me go, I hate you. Now she's screaming all these things, and he said, are you okay? I said, I am right now. And I was praying to her. I was like, no, I'm not talking to you. I'm speaking to Cindy. I rebuke you in the name of Jesus. You have no authority here. You have no dominion. This is not your place. And I'm saying these things the whole time. She's screaming, let me go. You're hurting me. I said, I'm not hurting you. I'm not letting you go. You have no place here. And so after that, she kind of calmed down a little bit. It was about another 2 or 3 minutes. And again, time is really relative. It could have been 30 seconds, but it felt like, you know, a full 2 or 3 minutes. When he sets out the rite of exorcism, opens up the little case, and he says, I need her in the chair. So me and another guy, and I forget who that even was, there were a couple of people there I didn't know, we put her in the chair, and he begins performing the rite of exorcism. First, he takes water, holy water, and throws it on her. And I thought, oh my God, here we go. And he said, did that hurt? And she laughed and hissed and spit, and he said, did that hurt? And she said, in some other voice, she said, no, ha-ha, and starts laughing. Or he said, did that holy water hurt? She said, no, ha-ha. He said, that's because it's not holy water. Then he took out the real stuff and just touched her with it, and she couldn't stand it. So he began to do the rite, and then there was a certain point where we had to, you know, sing or say a chant back and say certain things, kind of like a call and response, and he would tell us when those parts were. But it was very much kind of like what you see in the movie, not as animated, but definitely as firm. A better way to describe it is meek, because it's not like Father Darren was ever extremely loud. There were parts when he would get loud, but he was always very firm, very steadied, very confident, absolutely not shaken by this thing, because he knew, hey, you know, I've been called here for a purpose, and the Spirit of God's going to work through me via the rite of exorcism. Let's do this. And at one point during that whole thing, Cindy ended up on the ground. Her head, it was trying to smash her head here, so I put my palm on her forehead, and I was praying and began to speak in tongues while I was praying, and he was standing there. He was doing something to get prepared for the next part. And I looked at her, and her eyes were glazed, almost like a donut glaze, like if you know, like a Krispy Kreme donut, where you can, if you have a donut without the glaze, and then you have a donut with the glaze, you can still see the donut through the glaze. Her eyes looked like that. That's the best way to describe it. And there was a complete just other, like she was not here, just spaced out thing. Her body was rigid and tense. Her joints were bent weird. And then after performing the rite, of course, she went limp. and she was completely in her right mind, and everything was fine. And then he kept her in the house to speak to her privately about some things, and then while we were out there, and then he brought her out there, and then we all prayed, and he did a blessing over the house. So to be on the other side of it, it's really, I mean, think about somebody that you love to the moon and back, and they're saying things that I hate you, I want to kill you. And she was saying the same thing to Father Darren and the team too, but she, to look at you with that, and there was not like, it's not like she was just saying this because she was angry that I left the toilet seat up. This was a look of, if I could get to you right now, I would kill you. That does something to you, and you never forget that look. And because of that, I guess part of you is always waiting to see if you're going to see that look again. Not that you're going to be afraid of it, but that you know something's here. And when we have attacks now, there is a, I tell her that there's a tell, and she doesn't know how I know, and I don't tell anybody how I know, but if there's something that's going to happen, there's always a tell. There's a physical tell, and if you know what to look for, you can spot it. And I think it's because you know the person so well. So, you know, when you look for that and you understand it, you can prepare yourself, but you can't gauge what that other thing's going to do. You know, so that part of it is really, really not terrifying. It's just hard to deal with. It's frustrating. I think it would be terrifying to somebody that didn't know the Lord, because to them, maybe they're skeptics and they don't believe this is real. To those of us who have experienced it, it's very real. So it's not terrifying. It's just you understand the gravity of the foe that you're dealing with, and that there is absolutely nothing on this world that you can do apart from the power of Christ working through you to accomplish anything. Once you get that part of it, you're about 1/1000th of the way towards understanding what demonic possession is like, I feel like. So I hope that describes it on the other side as best as I can. It's not that you live in fear or that you're afraid for your life, but you never know when that part's going to happen, and you really wouldn't wish that on anybody. It's also frustrating to deal with somebody where they don't remember parts of time. There's still times I'm like, no, we did this. You don't remember? No, I don't. I never said that. I'm like, yes, you said that. I mean, she said these things several times, but she doesn't remember saying them. There are complete blocks of time that are gone. So the way I handle that is you just don't talk about those. They're memories to you, but they're not to her. So it's like, why in the world would you even try to dig up something that somebody doesn't remember, and they're not going to remember, and you don't want them to remember. So you just let it go. So that's probably the only, the two real frustrations on the other side of it. And I really don't think that those even come close to what the victim actually experiences. So, and of course, if you keep Corinthians 13 in mind, you know, love and love is patient, kind of, if you approach each other from the standpoint of love, none of that really matters anyway, because you're working towards a common goal and you know, and a common cause of knowing Christ and to know each other. But on the other side of being the person that witnessed it, it definitely is a... It'll definitely put a wrinkle in your week, put it that way.
A wrinkle? I think it'd be a little bit more than a wrinkle. My God. Speaking of God, don't you think it's interesting that the man in Cindy's life is a pastor? I'm starting to wonder if maybe he let this happen. I will say this, though. There's always a mission behind anything like this that happens with trauma. We've got to find a positive in all this. And one of the things that Cindy had mentioned in our show we did together, and I'm sure you feel the same too, Jason, you know, there's an underlying mission behind all this, and that's to raise awareness about this and to comfort anybody out there who may be dealing with this situation. Have you got any advice for anybody out there who might be going through something similar that Cindy's going through?
Yeah, contact us. That's the best. But because you're going to talk with two people that, number one, don't think you're crazy. Number two, don't think you're crazy. And number three, are never going to tell you that you're crazy. I'm convinced that there are people right now dealing with demonic events, either possession or oppression, and they're scared to death to say anything, because the minute you say that, you're labeled, you're branded, and you are. I mean, we deal with that from time to time. It took a while for her to really kind of get the courage to come. Oh, I guess not get the courage. Cindy's really courageous to get the, I guess to get the curiosity to open the door and go public with the story. Because it's such a wild story, and people would be like, you know, what's going on? And, you know, and then people see her and she's really pretty and beautiful, and they're like, how could that happen to such a beautiful person? And, you know, and then I deal with half the internet, and the guys are just like, oh my God, you know, you, as her,
first significant is like, yeah, well, I got to deal with that. And that's okay. I can deal with that part of it. But on my side, I get weird messages every now and then like, hey, I think I've got something in my house. I'm like, well, you probably have like an AC unit, a toilet, a kitchen. You know, it's like, you don't come to me with the demon thing because I know what that's like. And when people try to do it and be false, it always comes back to haunt them. We've had a couple of instances now where we've dealt with people who were simply untruthful. And you call them out. Well, you didn't have to call them out. We were working with some other people on some things, and well, there's confidentiality involved, so you can't name names, and you got to be careful. But the bottom line is we ended up speaking to the other people, and it was kind of an Ananias and Sapphira thing where it's like, hey, you're just being completely dishonest here. We can't help you unless you're willing to honestly assess the situation and take some responsibility, not for what happened, but for continuing to propagate the cycle so things can happen. Some people we've noticed get infatuated with kind of entertaining a demonic entity. And I mean, even scripture says, hey, there's pleasure in sin for a season, but the end result thereof is death. You play with a demon how long and see how fun that is. It might be like, oh my God, I've got this great tiger at the circus, but it's always going to turn on you. You can't entertain that. And we've dealt with that, and you just kind of have to pray for those people and let them go until they come around. And then other instances, people just outright fabricate stuff. So we're always the skeptic when somebody approaches. Well, I'll take that back. I am always the skeptic when somebody approaches her and says, I think I've got something. Because I'll tell her, no, you think there's something paranormal everywhere. And she's like, I really don't. Cindy just has this thing that she believes everybody's honest, you know, and she operates it. Well, why would they make it up? Well, in my mind, I'm thinking, well, there's a million reasons they'd make it up. 9 out of 10, they're not making it up. But I certainly vet them, and I think we work well together as a team. And she's come to realize, too, with certain things that have happened that, hey, I need to vet people and ask certain things and make sure before I waste my time and energy 3 months in and find out they're a complete fraud or they just want attention or, you know, whatever. But I would say people that are dealing with that right now, contact us. If you can't contact us or you need some immediate help, number one, go to your pastor. If your pastor says, you know, it's in your head, it's whatever, find another church because that guy's a liar. And I can absolutely say that. If your pastor's not willing to entertain the idea that there might be a spiritual force working against you when you read the Bible and there are always spiritual forces working against believers, then you need to find another church. But if your pastor says, hey, yes, seek their counsel, pray with them, see if there are resources in your town, see if you might be a candidate for some sort of if it's a possession event and you really think that, get somebody to come out and assess you and see if, hey, you might need to be exorcised. If it's oppression, the priest can come out or your pastor can come out and they can pray over your home. And, you know, you can do all of the rituals of faith that we do to try to drive this thing out. But you have to be diligent. And in the end, it simply comes down to two things. It's you and God. And your faith coupled with the Almighty Creator is a very, very extremely powerful thing. And we discount that. We've been told that it's certain formulas and there are certain things we have to do to keep God from being angry at us. And number one, that's don't sin. You know, and don't sin, God will get angry at you, and then he won't do things for you. Well, that's just a lie. God loves his kids. When my kids act up, I still do things for them, but I discipline them. So don't believe the hype. Cry out to God and say, hey, what am I doing? What would you have me do? I need help here, because God does not turn a deaf ear to his children. Seek your pastor. If your pastor won't help, find somebody else in a spiritual authority position that's willing to go out on a limb and help you and say, hey, and be in the fight with you, because it will be a fight. It's not going to be a two-week thing. You're going to need somebody that's going to be willing to do life with you for a while or be on speed dial for a year or two, you know, I would say. And like I say, contact us. If you're dealing with something and you say, and this is really resonating with you, we're absolutely open to looking at what's happened to you and, you know, giving you the resources that we have, seeing if there are people in your area, et cetera. We don't want you to suffer, because I simply don't believe that it's God's will for people to suffer demonic oppression for the rest of their life. I don't find that anywhere in Scripture.
Jason, wow. Just quite the mouthful. I love it. I think it's I think it's great advice. And I think that's sound, because very rarely do we have two perspectives on the same possession case. You know what I mean? One last thing I wanted to ask you about, because I do remember very vividly Cindy describing, you know, some encounters she's had on the property. I know she mentioned that a shadow person, stuff like that. Did you deal with any of that, or was it just Cindy? I don't think she mentioned you in those things or not.
I think that was before I entered the scene. There was a shadow figure that Chastity saw. There was a shadow figure the night we were at the house. I didn't see it. I saw it out of the corner of my eye one time, a glimpse of it. But we caught a little EVP later of it saying a few things. And you could get the sense that there was something there. That night at the house was really surreal because everything, the wind and all these sparkle things, it was really weird. And the tree ringing out like a dish rag and that thing jumping off and flying towards her and getting in the car. That was a whole terrifying thing. But the shadow figures were primarily her. The only shadowy thing that I saw was one morning we're sitting out on the front porch, and Cindy's a coffee girl, and by that I mean coffee runs her world. So in the morning you don't talk to her, you don't hug her, you don't say I love you, you don't do anything until she's got coffee, because then she can be coherent. So she'd gone in and she was like, hey, you want some coffee? And I'm like, well, yeah, I'll take some coffee. So I'm sitting out on the front or on the back porch actually, and she comes back out, and I told her, I said, hey, who's that in your shed? And she kind of, like, her face went white. She said, what do you mean? And I said, that guy in your shed, what's he doing? What's he doing over there? And she said, what do you mean, a guy? I said, well, she said, what he looked like. And I started to describe him. And I said, I couldn't really see features, but he looked kind of lanky, long arms, almost, you know, past his knees, that kind of lanky look. She said, do you have hair? I said, it would be like shoulder length or whatever. I said, but I just thought it was a neighbor that was borrowing something out of their shed. And their shed was a shop that her ex-husband, Jim, had built. It was a kind of like a typical shed that you'd put, you know, you could drive like a four-wheeler or a motorcycle in there. He used it as a shop, but on the side of it, he built out a little screened porch. So you could see through it. The bottom part was wood, kind of wood slats or whatever. Only wood slats, because they had stuff on the bottom. So there were more spaces there, but there was so much stuff on, you know, impacting that space that you couldn't see from about the waist down. But you could see, you know, perfectly from the waist up because of the railing. It was all screened. So I just saw a guy walking back and forth. And she said, what was he doing? I said, he was just walking. I said, it was really really strange. He just kind of was walking back and forth. Well, later she told me about Jim. And that's when she said, I've got something at my house. And so that's when, the short time after that, I told her, I'm like, hey, I'm a pastor. I believe you. You're not crazy. So she hadn't told me that. And I hadn't told her anything because you say, you know, hey, I'm in ministry. People just have all of these things they conjure up. And they think you're perfect, and no, ministers have the capacity to sin, and we do, and sometimes we blow our lives up, and we deal with that, and God's gracious, and He forgives us, and we go on, but people tend to think that you're up there right with God all the time, so they treat you different, so there's always a little bit of hesitancy, and those in full-time ministry will know what I mean. Now, I don't think the stigma is there as much today as it was probably 15 or 20 years ago, with now you have different, you know, non-denominational churches that are more mainstream and whatnot. But there was definitely a little bit of hesitancy. So it was kind of a breath of fresh air for us to disclose, hey, you know, these things that she's experienced, and hey, here's what I do. I might be able to help. But as for shadow figures, that's the only thing I saw. She saw a lot of that. She would see them more frequently. And the thing with us is that's how we operate when we work together. I always tell her, I usually will see something before I feel it, but if I feel it, by that time, it's usually too late. And she's the opposite. She'll feel things, but she can see things, and she sees things way before me and sees a lot more than me. There have been very few instances where we're together that we see the same thing. Usually it's a sense that she gets, and I kind of am like, I saw something out of the corner of my eye or whatever, but it's never been a dark shadow thing. She experienced most of that, and that was before I was there, Chastity, they saw that. Then there were the day that I saw it in the shed, and then that night at the house. And then there have been a few times since then where she'll say, I saw a dark shadow figure, you know, kind of move past. And I don't ever discount that or say, oh, you're just making that up, because I believe her. I know what that's like, and I can see in her eyes what, you know, there's veracity there. She's scared. So, yeah, but that's primarily her.
All right, Jason, we're almost at the close of the show. I just want to give you a second, though, to tell people a little tiny bit about your writing. I know that you are a writer and stuff like that, so I'm just going to throw it out there to you, Jason. Go ahead, let people know about, your side gig, we'll say.
Yeah, my side gig, my main gig now that I'm not a minister, you can find me online at jasonwbritt.com. I do business writing mostly for, you know, publications. I've written for Forbes, HuffPo, Entrepreneur, Inc., Customer Think. I did blog management for an HGTV guy Ahmed Hassan. He did Yard Crashers the first six seasons. I do a lot of blog stuff and conference letters there. the credit union industry. I do a lot of writing for them. So it's business writing mostly. I'm working on a couple of books, but those will be later. You can also find me on Facebook at The Real Jason Britt. You just do facebook.com/TheRealJasonBritt and you'll see me there. And from there, you can hop over to Instagram if you want to. My Instagram is not really legitimate, I guess you would say. People, you know, you need to focus it all on business. Well, no, I've got life that happens. So I put a lot of pictures up that motivate people. There's a lot of pictures of our son Cade up there, etc. So but we and some pictures of me, but yeah, that's about it. And then some inspirational things, poetry, etc., stuff like that that I do. But if you need a writer, if you need some business writing, I can certainly help you. You know, contact me. We'll see what we can do. But the real deal is Cindy's book, and she's working towards closing out the manuscript. We've got a list of probably 200 publishers, and we've narrowed them down to about 50 because I know some people, and she knows some people too, that, you know, these can go somewhere. And so the step two will be manuscript submission, and they all have different requirements. And then step three will be publication. And then certainly we'll let everybody know when The Possession of Cindy Sauer comes out in paperback, you know, online or whatever form they want it in.
Of course, I'll end this episode the same way I started the episode with Cindy Sauer a couple of months ago. The greatest trick the devil ever played, make us all think he doesn't exist. Jason Britt, thank you so much for spreading that awareness. Thank you so much for taking the time tonight to be on the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks again for having me. It was a pleasure.
Well, the time to say goodbye is upon us. But don't worry, you can keep track of the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast very easily. It's available on Stitcher, iTunes, Podbean, and TuneIn Radio. Just look for the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast banner. Of course, if you'd like to keep up to date, you can always check out the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast Facebook page, drop a like, and every single time a new show goes up, you'll be notified. You can also follow me, John Mallard, on Twitter, at O-D-D-T-O-N-F-L-D. That's Odd to Newfoundland. Get your latest news on the podcast as well as the ever-popular para-joke of the day. From the oldest city in North America, I bid you adieu. From the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.